Hi, I'm Ben Trefney, news director here at KALW, and I want to invite you to become a member of KALW. We are 70% listener supported, so as you listen to this, please make sure to go to the Donate Now button at KALW.org. Thanks.
KALW.
Jurors reach a verdict in the murder trial of 18-year-old Nia Wilson, but the Wilson family's fight isn't over yet.
I'm here to get justice for my sister and myself and my other little sister, Tashia, as well.
Will the defendant serve time in a prison or mental facility? We talk about the next phase of the Nia Wilson trial. Then we'll meet a dancer who doesn't hear the music he dances to. He feels it.
The vibration of it. And I can feel the music telling me all the image that is happening.
That plus an update on the coronavirus in the Bay Area. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Our top story this week has been novel coronavirus, or COVID-19. So today we'll start off with that. With me is KALW's Angela Johnston with the latest news from the Bay Area. First, Angela, what's the latest on the numbers and just the overall picture?
Well, that number is constantly changing, and it varies county by county. I'm actually not sure if there's a Bay Area coronavirus count, but as of right now, there are 14 confirmed cases in San Francisco. Santa Clara County has 45. Mm-hmm. I got a press release from Alameda County today, and they now have 3 confirmed cases of COVID-19. But remember, these numbers are constantly changing.
Right.
The big news out of the Bay Area today is that San Francisco just banned large gatherings in the city. That's 1,000 people or more, and apparently includes things like Warriors games. Mm. Symphony was already canceled. Things like that were already canceled.
Right.
Santa Clara County already had the same ban in effect a few days before.
Okay. And there was also an announcement today at City Hall. Mayor London Breed had a press conference with the San Francisco Unified School District Administration. What did they say?
They said they are keeping schools open. We sent reporter Joshua Sirodiak down to City Hall to the press conference.
We know that childcare could end up being a challenge for parents. We also know that sometimes this is the only place where many of our kids have access to meals and facilities and other places where they can even wash their hands. We have to think about, you know, the impacts on young people. And so I fully support that decision, along with the most recent decision that we made here in San Francisco to cancel all major events that exist in the city with over 1,000 attendees.
One of the reasons they decided to keep schools open is because they say schools are an essential service, mm-hmm. and there are many community benefits besides just going to class and learning. Like, some kids get free school lunch at school.
Right. What even breakfast.
Right. Or what about the parents who can't get the day off to stay home with their kids? Plus, SFUSD said children haven't been shown to be a high-risk group for serious illness.
Right.
But they are canceling all assemblies, field trips, sports games, and concerts. And if a parent decides to keep their kid home, those absences will be excused. Mm-hmm. In the long term, they also announced that they'll be exploring ways to implement online distance learning if, say, school does need to be shut down.
Uh-huh.
But their one concern about that is that not all children have access to the internet or a computer.
Right. Yeah, my kids are still in school over in the East Bay, but I also heard the San Francisco Diocese has shut down 90 schools in San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin counties. But Angela, let's go on to the healthcare scene. So hospitals, what are they doing? I know UCSF has a big tent outside for triage.
Yeah, UCSF and also Stanford. I actually went to the doctor's office this morning at Stanford, and my doctor told me that Stanford Hospital has developed its own test for COVID-19 and is using that in-house to test patients that come in exhibiting symptoms. Mm-hmm. It can quickly identify patients with the disease in as little as 12 hours. The CDC tests, those test kits that everybody's talking about, yeah. can take up to a few days to get final results. This Stanford test isn't being offered to everyone that comes into the hospital, but it's something.
Mm-hmm. And Angela, I heard nurses around the Bay Area are protesting. What's that about?
Yeah, nurses across the state are holding what they're calling a National Day of Action today. They say they're worried about their employers, hospitals and doctors' offices, they're worried about the way they're handling this. Mm-hmm. They are demanding better screening policies, isolation policies. They claim that, quote, facilities have failed to provide adequate personal protective equipment to nurses working with COVID-19 patients, and that some facilities are telling them to continue to work while asymptomatic, even though they've been exposed to the virus and might be contagious.
Okay. Well, thank you, Angela.
Thanks.
Angela Johnston is KELW's deputy news director, and we'll have updates on coronavirus all this week on Cross Currents, so stay tuned. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Big news broke in downtown Oakland Tuesday night. Jurors found John Lee Cowell, the man who killed 18-year-old Nia Wilson, guilty of first-degree murder and other charges. The killing shook the Bay Area and made national headlines in July of 2018. Nia and her two sisters were on the MacArthur BART station platform when Cowell, then 27 years old, attacked them. Although jurors have reached a verdict, the case is not over yet. Now they have to decide on his mental state. KALW's Janae Darden has been following the case and spoke with members of Nia Wilson's family, and she's here with me to give an overview and to talk about what is next. Hey, Janae.
Hey, Hannah.
So the jurors did not take long to reach this decision.
No, just a few hours. They found John Lee Cowell guilty of first-degree murder with a special circumstance of lying in wait and attempted murder of Nia's older sister Latifa, who, as you recall, was stabbed as well.
Okay, what was the family's reaction?
Well, here's Latifa Wilson outside of the courthouse with NBC News.
It's overwhelming. Happy that Nia could rest at peace.
So I spoke to Latifa on the day of the closing arguments, and she says, I believe that this is go in our favor.
Okay, and what about the defendant, John Lee Cowell?
He's been absent much of the trial because of his outburst and refusal to be in court. But he was there on Tuesday and reportedly didn't show any expression when they read the verdict.
And where is Nia's father? He's usually very vocal.
Yeah, Latifa tells me he had a stroke in December, but he's recovering. You know, it's a very stressful time for the family.
Right. So what about the jury deciding over the state of Cowell's mind, his mental health?
So John Lee Cowell, he's been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and now the jury has to decide on his mental state during the attacks. So the second phase of this trial kicked off earlier today. If jurors find him sane, he may spend life in prison without the possibility of parole. Mm-hmm. If they think he was insane at the time of the crime, he may serve his sentence in a mental facility.
Okay. If he has a history of mental illness, what is the prosecution trying to prove?
Prosecutor Butch Ford is not denying Cowell has mental issues. He's arguing Cowell was aware of his actions and his mental illness didn't play a role in the crime. So, for example, the prosecution raises the question, if Cowell was so psychotic, why did he hide the knife after the attacks, mm-hmm. clean it, and change clothes? Mm-hmm. And a clinician testified that since being in custody, Cowell said he wanted to look crazy and was optimistic about being found not guilty by reason of insanity. But the defense attorney, Christina Moore, argues days before the killing, therapists say he was delusional and hearing voices that people were out to kill him. And he had been released from a maximum security facility about 2.5 months before he killed Nia Wilson.
Mm-hmm. And I heard he also thought the Wilson sisters were aliens trying to kidnap his grandmother?
Yeah, that was interesting because Cowell testified that he attacked black females that were aliens and gang members. Mm. And that was the language he used. But the prosecution argues that he didn't mention aliens to BART police when arrested. And the prosecution accused the defense attorney of coaching Cowell. Mm-hmm. About a week before the killing, Cowell said a black woman punched him in the face. And the prosecutor says Cowell followed the sisters on the train that they took to MacArthur Station, targeted them, and later there was some tape of him saying the N-word on the bus around another black woman. This was right after the killing. Mm-hmm. Now, Cal is white, and even though the prosecutor brought up race, the DA didn't charge him with a hate crime.
So, Janae, what is the makeup of the jury?
8 women, 4 men. It looked to me at least 4 people of color. Maybe some were too fair for me to tell. Mm. The age range appears to be early 30s, late 20s to seniors. I didn't notice any black jurors. That's not to say there weren't any, you know, maybe because some were very fair, but I didn't notice any.
Right. And you were telling me that closing arguments took a very emotional turn between the defense attorney and the family?
So people in the audience who were mostly Nia Wilson's family and supporters would sometimes mumble in agreement or disagreement with the lawyers.
Okay.
And the defense attorney, she had asked the judge to quiet them down. Mm-hmm. So during her closing argument, she was saying something that caused someone in the audience to grumble. And after the grumble, Hannah, the defense attorney turns to the Wilson family section and yelled, "This isn't about you."
Ooh.
And people gasped. Mm-hmm. People clutched their pearls. Somebody said, "Woo!" You know. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to the family after. They were—
It's pretty outrageous.
Yeah, I never seen anything like that. They were very offended, the family, angry. Mm. I talked to cousins, aunts, you know, her sister Latifah, you know, and they say, "Our loved one was killed. Of course it's about us."
Right.
And Latifah says she thought what the defense attorney said was very disrespectful.
Did she apologize or anything?
So she apologized to the jury for her outburst and hoped that she didn't offend them. And then she started crying. And that didn't— that didn't sit well with the family either. Mm-hmm. But the family member said she should apologize to them.
Right.
But I've never seen an attorney lash out at the victim's family.
Right.
In court.
And the trials brought up, you know, bigger issues, larger issues.
Yeah,
too.
You know, people have been talking about race, the broken mental health system, misogyny, and BART's safety. And mm-hmm. it's really crazy to think that just 1 year before the stabbings, BART had completed installing working cameras on all of their trains. Mm.
The family must be having some relief that this is finally winding down. How much longer could this last?
So Latifah shares with me that she's feeling some relief that this is coming to an end. And the judge says, depending on how long it takes for the jurors to deliberate, it could run into next week. But, you know, the family, they have a long healing process to go.
Okay. And we'll be following with you. Thank you, Janae.
Thank you.
Janae Darden is KLW's East Oakland reporter. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. About 2% of people in the United States are deaf or have significant hearing loss, while up to 15% have at least some level of hearing loss. The Bay Area is home to a vibrant deaf community, including artists and performers who are pushing their craft in innovative ways. Antoine Hunter is an Oakland-based dancer, choreographer, director, and advocate for the deaf and hard of hearing. When Antoine was growing up, dance became a lifeline to the world around him, and now he uses it to communicate the deaf experience to audiences all over the world. KALW's Christopher Agusa has his story.
It's a chilly evening in San Francisco's Tenderloin District. I'm in the lobby of a tiny performance space called Counterpulse. They produce all kinds of interesting and sometimes experimental shows. Tonight, I'm here for a dance performance. The show is called Deaf Louder. It's being produced by Antoine Hunter and his Urban Jazz Dance Company. Tonight, Antoine and the other deaf dancers will perform in front of a mixed hearing and deaf audience. In the dark performance space, Antoine walks on stage and addresses the crowd. An interpreter voices for him.
Deaf should be elevated with that capital D, deaf, representing culture, power, and strength. That's deaf. Capital D.
Antoine has an electric energy when he signs. You can feel the entire audience being drawn in. And when he begins his solo performance, they're already on board. It's an expressive, interpretive dance about his experience as a deaf man in a hearing world. He uses powerful and graceful movements, along with video projected on the wall behind him, to tell his story. When he takes a bow, there's no applause. Instead, there's this. That's the sound of an entire audience stomping their feet. Antoine can feel the vibrations through the floor. After an intermission, the full dance company performs. Five dancers walk out on stage and lower their heads. And there's a moment where I wonder, how will they stay on tempo? The music starts. It's a bass-heavy Miles Davis tune, and they burst into movement. And it is perfectly in sync. They are moving and leaping and spinning, arms and legs extending, and it just looks beautiful. I find myself trying to imagine their experience, what it would feel like to be dancing and not hear the music the way I'm used to hearing it. Instead of the snare drum, the horns, the guitar, those highs and mids, instead of that, it's just the bass rumbling through my body. I can't really imagine what that's like. So I wanted to ask Antoine about it.
Some water? Your name?
Antoine Hunter.
He tells me that deaf isn't one thing. Some people are profoundly deaf, but there's a lot of variation. Antoine himself was born with about 5% hearing.
Being deaf, we have different hearing level. Some can hear the bird, but not the motorcycle. Some can hear the motorcycle, but not the bird. Different frequency. So some call them hard of hearing, some say deaf. And so many of them don't really always say it's a disability for some people, but with culture, another way we experience life. My great-grandfather will have a big stereo. I would lean my back against it, and I could feel the vibration of it. And I can feel the music telling me all the images that is happening. My great-grandfather was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm listening to jazz music. He said, what? What do you know about jazz? I said, well, it feels like you get up in the morning, the sun rise, and you go to school, the t-shirts are mean, but you're happy to leave school because you go home and eat. You know, all the things that you feel during that day to, you know, make you who you are. You know, he said, that's right.
As a performer, Antoine's had to find creative ways of adapting to an art form in which most people are hearing.
As a dancer, people will ask me, oh, you can feel the vibration and that's it, you'll be fine. Like, no, if I jump, I can't feel the vibration. If I'm running around really, really fast, I can't feel the vibration. I have to slow down, stay in one place for a while to feel the vibration. So what did that mean? I'm risking it. I'm risking it. I'm using every intelligence of my being to do what I have to do to make it work. Sometimes I try to see what's happening with the light. Maybe the light feel the vibration and I see with the rhythm is, or I look at the magician, they bopping their head and tapping their feet. I say, oh, okay, that's what the rhythm is. My body started to develop a Spider-Man sense. And some people are like, how do you know when the music starts or the music changed? Well, my Spider-Man sense.
Antoine's been adapting his whole life. His childhood was a difficult one. He found himself unable to connect with others around him.
Feel like you lose your mind when you can't express yourself. When you can't express yourself, you feel crazy.
He began to struggle more and more with depression and feelings of isolation. One day, his mom took him to a performance that opened up his world.
When I saw the Oakland Ballet, it was jaw-dropping. Yeah, I could understand everything that was happening during the performance. It was like colors, emotion, you know, loud vibration of the music. But it was so expressive.
And then something happened that Antoine had never experienced before.
Some things were really, really funny, because usually if you watch something on TV, the caption came a little bit late. And so something funny come up, I would laugh later. Everybody already laughed a long time ago, and it made me look really weird. But this time, I could be in the same rhythm with everyone else, and laughing at the same time. I was like, ha, 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 wait a minute. Well, I looked around. Oh, everybody's laughing at the same time. I get to laugh and cry and smile at the same time as everyone. I saw dance was another way to communicate. It was the art that's alive to help you connect. So how can I get into that? I said, Mom, I want to be a ballet dancer.
Private ballet classes were too expensive. Antoine had to wait until high school to take dance.
I didn't want to be the only deaf person in there not doing so well. So I practiced. And I was hoping people would dance with me. But guess what? My teacher tried to have a group. Working in the group, nobody wanted to dance with me. So she was like, why don't you go ahead and do a solo? So I picked the music. Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You.
If I
couldn't really understand the word. I read it. But I feel her emotion. And then it was the instrumental break. I mean, I was just moving like I was out in the ocean with the lightning and the thunderstorm. You know what I mean? I felt the waters push me, the wind, the fire, the lightning, shifting all in my body, my spirit. And everybody in the room that was watching me would stop and they give me a reply, and they were telling me what they saw. They saw that I was cold. They saw that I was alone. They saw that I wanted to break free. And I was right. I was like, whenever I say something, people couldn't understand me. But when I did, they understood me. It stayed my life. Yeah. And you know, just that thing before that, before then, I almost took my life away because people couldn't understand me with words. I couldn't connect, but they couldn't understand me with dance. My work talks about deafhood. You know, it talks about the journey of being deaf. My work talks about the hidden truth that people don't want to talk about. It's unheard of. And I get people to talk about it through my work.
Back at Deaf Louder, near the end of the performance, there's a moment that feels really special. Antoine asks for volunteers and invites three people on stage to dance with him. As they introduce themselves, we learn that two of the volunteers are hearing and one is deaf. And what follows is a joyous dance session. They finish up to a stomping celebration from the crowd.
Hey, give them some love. Come on, give them more. Come on.
The interpreter voices again for Antoine.
Could you tell who is deaf or hearing? No. That's the point. Dancing. It's about the human element.
It's a point that really lands for me. When we're authentically connecting, the how of it tends to fall away.
I love to help people. That's my greatest passion. They say, dance is the greatest passion. Like, no, helping people is my greatest passion. And dance, the art, is alive. It has the power to heal. Right. It helped me, yes, to stay my life. But now I want, because I learned how to do dance to stay my life, I wanted to save other people's life and give other people a voice.
In San Francisco, I'm Christopher Agusa for Cross Currents.
Antoine Hunter is the founder and director of the Urban Jazz Dance Company. He also founded the International Deaf Dance Festival in San Francisco. It's been running for 8 years. You can find a transcript of this story along with a deaf accessible video at klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.